Hello and welcome to the November 18th episode of the TMS Wikis online Tuesday night discussion group. This is a discussion group often where we will discuss books. Often we will have special guests. Tonight is a case where we have a very special guest. We have director Michael Galinsky. He is one of the three principals of the Rumor Production Company, which is now working and has been working on a documentary about the mind-body connection, about emotions, and about Dr. Sarno for about 10 years. And he's going to tell us about that experience and what it was like and take our questions and just kind of share what he's got to say. So we are really looking forward to it. We're going to share this recording for various people who are interested in learning more about the film. So I should perhaps say a little bit more about myself and about the organization. First, we'll talk about the organization which is sponsoring this. This is sponsored by the PPD TMS Peer Network. That's our official name. We are a 501c3 IRS certified nonprofit public charity corporation. And our mission is to spread the word about mind-body conditions, and in particular, to empower what we refer to as peers, i.e. people like us who have had mind-body conditions, to share what they've learned through dealing with those mind-body conditions with others, to tell their stories and their viewpoints. So as part of that, we have an online forum, we have a weekly chat room, and we also have a regularly scheduled call-in discussion group, which is what you are listening to right now. We have been supporting a Rumor in their efforts to raise money to finish their film. As I said, they've been working on it for 10 years, and now they are doing a Kickstarter. And Michael very kindly offered, I think actually I suggested it first, if he wanted to come on and join us. And so here he is. We're very happy to have him. And welcome, Michael.
Thank you very much. I guess what I'll do really briefly is tell you how we came to make this movie so that you have some background. But when I was younger, I'm actually in the house that I grew up in now. And in this house, my dad had a bleeding ulcer and almost died when I was in second grade. And shortly after he recovered from that, we had a small fender bender and he got whiplash. And my dad was a clinical psychologist. So when someone gave him Dr. Sarno's book in the late 70s or the early 80s, I can't remember which, his first book, he immediately understood what it was and what it meant, and he got over his whiplash very quickly. But he continued to have a whole series of other mind-body issues his whole life. And eventually, actually, after he retired, and this connects to the larger story of the movie, but he had all kinds of autoimmune disease symptoms, and they didn't know if he had rheumatoid arthritis or he had ALS, and eventually he got hit by a car, and he died in that manner. And it, to me, basically TMS, or all of these kind of mind-body issues, are what did him in, which makes me that much more committed to making this movie and to figure out for myself how to make sure that doesn't happen to me and to others.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and so what happened next was my brother was in college. I have a twin brother, and he was in graduate school, and he lost the ability to type or drive because he had such pain in his hands. And he went to one of the best surgeons in the city, and they told him that he was going to have bone shaved away from his collarbone to free the nerves in his hands. And so my dad screamed at him, "Would you just go to Dr. Sarno?" And so he did, and 3 weeks later, he called me up and asked for his car back, at which point, because his hands had gotten that much better, he rapidly improved. At that point, I read Healing Back Pain myself, and, you know, my back would go out once or twice a year, not a big deal, 1 or 2 days on the floor, and I was back up. But for 10 years, I was completely fine. And then when I had finished our first documentary, and there was a lot of struggle with that, and I had a two-year-old who was difficult, to say the least, and I was starting another movie, it started to catch up to me, and my legs started to hurt, and I was reading the book, and I was trying to get better, and I was reading the book, and then boom, I was on the floor, and I couldn't move, I think I called Dr. Sarno, but it was too expensive. I couldn't afford to go see him, and I even got an MRI, because I had insurance that would pay for that, but not for Dr. Sarno, and I eventually said, I have to go see him. So I borrowed money from, I think actually my dad or my brother helped pay for it, and I went to see him. And I quickly started to improve. I didn't have a miraculous recovery, but just seeing him helped immeasurably. And at that point, that was 2004. I showed him our previous movie, and he liked it. And he understood why I showed it to him. And he said, yes, you can make a movie. And that's when we started shooting. We shot a little bit in 2004 and 2005. But we really wanted to make sure we were doing it right, because we had such respect for him. And we didn't feel like we knew how to make that movie. And so we just kind of kept trying to get grants so we'd have time to focus on it and try to conceptualize how to do it. And we weren't able to figure it out. You know, we shot maybe 10 hours of footage, and we stayed in contact, but other projects came up that we had to do that took, you know, precedence time-wise. And then we finished a movie called Battle for Brooklyn, which we finished in 2011, and we had a lot of stress and strain with that one, and I got slammed to the floor once again. And that at that point, as I hit the floor, I screamed, "Grab the goddamn camera, we're making this movie." And so I told him to shoot me while I was on the floor screaming, because I knew that if we had to start shooting right then. And so while I was on the floor, I started shooting all the time and trying to figure out how to make the movie. And as I recovered, we began to film that process. And also, that's when we realized that the world had changed. In the 3 or 4 years that we had not shot, things had changed dramatically. As I was saying before, there was a new book by Dr. Clark, They Can't Find Anything Wrong. There was another book out by Gabor Mate called When the Body Says No. And all these things we would just slowly discover. And the National Institute of Health study had come out, which said that pain was a disease in and of itself, and it pointed out that it was a $636 billion problem. So everything that Dr. Sarna had written in the foreword of his earliest books, saying that if we simply knew to wash our hands during the Black Plague, it would have been over. The same is true of this pain crisis we're beginning to have in the 70s, he said. We're going to have an epidemic because we're treating the symptomology and we're not really looking at what the cause is, and the cause is repressed emotions. And that started the kind of the second phase of the journey. And so for the last 3 years, we've been traveling with other movies. Since we don't have any money, every time we go somewhere else, like we had some screenings in Seattle. So I looked up who's in Seattle, and it turned out Dr. Turk, who was one of the principals on the Institute of Medicine study, was there, and he agreed to film with us. And I think we posted something from him today. And that was a great, great start to understanding it from a more kind of scientific level. And then over the last couple of years, we've just been gathering the footage and starting to slowly cut it. But we really need a year to dig in and be with all the footage and shoot. And you know, we're raising money because we also need to travel. We definitely feel like we have to shoot with some of the other doctors and some of the other writers, and as well as some of the skeptics. So that's pretty much where we are. Are there any questions now after I've
gone? Well, I've muted people just for sound quality. I'll start unmuting them in case someone wants to jump in. I do have some questions of my own lined up. I thought it might be interesting to do some kind of structured questions about the film.
Sure.
The first question, which I'm very curious about, is so what was it like to follow Dr. Sarno for 10 years? I mean, that must have been quite fascinating. It's a great opportunity. Can you tell us any stories about that?
Yeah, well, you know, we didn't like I said, he was a little reticent to be a character. And what we were trying to do when we first started was thinking, okay, The Divided Mind's coming out. We'll follow him as he promotes that book. He'll do book signings. You know, nothing. Nothing happened. You know,
right.
they didn't even have a book release or anything. It was just like the book came out and that way. So there was nothing to film. But there were really interesting things that happened. Like one time I was filming in the office, and we'll probably put this scene up later in the week, but a psychiatrist came to see him from Atlanta. And he came to see him because he was, you know, giving a lot of people Dr. Sarno's book, but he just wanted to be able to talk about it with a little bit more authority. So Dr. Sarno started talking to him, asking him about his experience. And it turned out he says, well, you know, I called you a few years ago when I got out of medical school. A guy was falling off a gurney, and I went to grab him, and I pulled out my back, and I was kind of laid up for months. And, you know, my dad gave me the book. And he said, oh, tell your dad knew about the book. And he goes, yeah, well, my story's a little bit longer than that, which is that When I was about 12, my mom was bedridden for 2 years, and my dad carried her into your office, and she walked out.
Wow.
So, so here's another guy who had this really long experience, and even, you know, and I think that was, I think he even mentioned that that was part of the reason he became a psychiatrist, and but even still, he had this situation where he wasn't getting better, and his dad was like, "Do you believe it 100%?" Well, you know, my medical training and everything else, you know. And finally, once he completely embraced the idea, he too got better. And so it was a really interesting intersection of both kind of, you know, his own experience, but with kind of the larger cultural forces at play, which is that, you know, he saw it with his own eyes. His mother walked out of the office when he was 10, and still he had a hard time believing it because he'd been through medical school, which kind of counseled against that idea.
It's a big nocebo.
Yeah.
I also thought it would be very interesting that you've worked with a number of Dr. Sarno's most trusted psychologists, and these are people who maybe aren't as well known within the online TMS community, but they are, I think, very, very well trusted by Dr. Sarno, people who he entrusts his patients to. Mm-hmm. What was it like to work with Dr. Feinblatt?
That was great, Dr. Arlene Feinblatt. Well, when I first went to see him, I was very resistant to going to therapy. I grew up with a psychologist father and a social work mother, and they are both batshit crazy. So, that was for effect. No, but they were both, you know, it left me a little bit less, I don't think they were always the best parents, and it left me a little bit cynical about the kind of the whole thing. So I always, my own impulses to try and do things my own way and figure things out for myself and be an individual about it. So I really avoided it. But as soon as I hit the floor that second time, I told my wife, you know, call my mother right now. I just have to talk to her and basically not tell her off, but just have her listen for once. And then call Arlene and try and set up an appointment. I have to see her immediately. Unfortunately, I couldn't actually get off the floor. She was able to get an appointment, but I could not get up. I literally couldn't move from the floor of my office. I was stuck there for weeks. And so I called her on the day of the appointment to say, I can't make it. I'm sorry. And I said, do you have anything you can tell me? And what she told me was, all I can tell you is be good to yourself.
Huh.
And you know, that's taken me 3 years to understand, but I'm slowly beginning to understand what that means. And I think that's a really big and important thing. It's a really hard thing to understand. But she's also been really generous. And then I did go and see her a few times, and she graciously allowed me to shoot because I wanted that to be part of the movie. And you know, one of the first things she did, I don't know if any of you have had TMS therapists that you've worked with, but you know, she said, so tell me about your mother. And I said, well, you know, my mom, she's a little difficult. You're smiling. Why are you smiling? You just told me your mother is difficult and you're smiling. Does that make sense? Oh, my God. So, you know, and it's to help you see the unconscious kind of structures of your personality that are there to please others or make other people feel comfortable. Well, what about you? What about your feelings? Anyway, that was very helpful. I did only see her two or three times. I'm not a wealthy man, and it's not cheap.
Yeah.
But it's also that I still want to do it my own way and try and figure it out. But it was extremely helpful to have the sessions with her. And then recently, we reached out to Fran Summer Anderson, Dr. Anderson, and Eric Sherman. And we filmed interviews with the two of them recently. And part of that was, you know, we also. The hard thing that I faced, actually, one of the things that I struggle with is trying to not shoot too much. So, for instance, my sister's like, you got to go shoot Jon Kabat-Zinn. And I'm like, we already shot Ram Dass. I don't, it's one or the other. You can't have both of them in there, in a way. Mm-hmm. And because there is kind of a rule of filmmaking, which is different than, say, even magazine writing or anything else, you just can't have too many people in the film, or you lose a sense of narrative. People start to get confused. Who is that person? Do I know that person? Why are they talking to me? And so that's something we're trying to deal with. And yet at the same time, they all have amazing insights and interesting things to tell you. They may not fit into the narrative of the film, but when you put them up as singular clips where people get almost like in an online game where you start to go down a rabbit hole that you're making yourself, you're clicking from clip to clip to clip because you want to figure it out. That's a very different thing. And so we want to have a very resource-rich website that has those things. Because it's very different to read something that someone writes than to have them say it to you directly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they're different kinds of storytelling.
Such a powerful medium.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you talk about that with Dr. Feinblatt. I was on a teleconference with her 2 weeks ago, and she's very nice, but you can tell that she's got that kind of crash into you ISTDP thing.
Yeah.
And it's and she's been working with Dr. Sarno for, was it 35 years or 30?
You tell me.
The very first one. Yeah. Great. And also, so we had another theme that came up on the forum recently, a thread about Ashok Gupta. And I think you said in your update that you listened to his recording while you were lying on the floor and that it helped you.
It helped me immeasurably. And it kind of set me on a path of realizing, well, it's interesting. So when I was reading about Glenn Beck, it felt like I was reading about myself. You know, I had pain, and then I couldn't sleep at night, and you know, I was working myself into a fury. And I totally understood that. When I hit the floor, I had gone way past my capacity, and that was one of the first things that I figured out about myself in terms of TMS, is that through some sense of low self-esteem that I wasn't even aware of, I just pushed myself beyond my capacity on a regular basis. And in this case, way beyond my capacity, to the point where I just, you know, my body put me on the floor and said, lay here.
Yeah.
And yet I was still kind of wired. So my brother, who I had gone to see Dr. Sarno, visited Ashok Gupta in England. And he had this meditation CD. And as I think you emailed me for the other day, but there's this one line on there, which, you know, as he's bringing you into a deeper state of meditation, he says, you know, be aware of the pain in your body. So it could be designed to specifically speak to exactly what Dr. Sarno was talking about. It's like, be aware of the pain, but don't let it be in control of you. It says that which you resist will persist.
Oh, he actually says that. Okay, I see. Yeah.
And it's almost like a nursery rhyme, but at that point when I would listen to it over and over, that's when I would kind of pass out, but it was just such an, it's true. I mean, that's the nature of all meditation and all practice, which is just letting it all, just observing it instead of reacting to it. And that's when you can learn to do that, to not react. That's the process that you're retraining your brain to do, in terms of whatever symptoms you might have, instead of reacting to them. That's like the doubling down on the fear as soon as but it's a difficult thing to do, but that meditation helped me immeasurably. And that's why I asked him for his DVD program to have as a reward. And that, interestingly enough, that one was gone in the first day and a half.
Yeah.
Because he only gave us five of them.
Also, I think one of the things which is really going to drive people to the movie and get people excited is all the celebrities there that you have. You have some big names. I mean, Howard Stern, Larry David, John Stossel, Ben Crane. Do you have any stories of particularly helpful celebrities that you've worked with, or any that you learned from, or that were eye opening? I know a lot of the people who listen to this will be people who know a lot about TMS, and maybe we've wondered about these people for a while.
Yeah, well, so you know, one of the things that was interesting is, like I said, this time making this movie, we've never really had celebrities in our films, and yet they're always about media. And they're about how stories move through the world. So it's usually an underdog, like Dr. Sarno, fighting for what they believe in against incredible odds. And you're seeing the story that they're fighting play out in the media. And you see how they're vilified. And you see, you know, you're with them. So you get to see how the media works. And you see the story plays out. And that's what we did, I think, pretty effectively in Horns and Halos and in Who Took Johnny and in Battle for Brooklyn. But we didn't really have that this time. The same kind of access to that same kind of verite narrative to follow. So we realized that in order to tell the story, we had to have celebrities because, A, they're one of the drivers of the story, but B, that's what will make people interested in talking about the movie from a media perspective. And, of course, the one that we really felt like we actually could not make this movie without Howard Stern in it. It didn't seem relevant, but it took 10 years to get him. And that happened because my partner, David, was able to get in touch with Don Buchwald, his agent. And Don said, there's no way he's going to do it. But it turns out that Don Buchwald was also a patient. In fact,
I've corresponded with him, actually. We tried to get him involved in the Thank You, Dr. Sarno project.
We'll give you one for the, we'll transcribe it for you from the notes.
All right.
But he, so David and Suki went to see him because I was not there. They went to interview him. And when they walked in, he said, "Sorry, Howard, can't do it." You know, I said, "Okay, you know, well," and then they filmed the interview and it went really well. And afterwards, David said to Don, like, what do you think we can do to really make this work? And he said, "Well, you got to get Howard. All right, I'll ask him." You know, and the next day we got an email saying, "Okay, you get 10 minutes. And so
wow.
2 weeks later, we flew to New York and shot with Howard. Actually, he said, "You get 5 minutes." And he gave us 12, but it was 12 very good minutes.
Wow.
And then with Larry David, it was funny because he has not been public about it, but we were doing a different job, a political job, with these young guys, and this one guy, his back was killing him. We were actually shooting Chelsea Clinton that day, and we were waiting for her to come. He couldn't stand up, and he couldn't sit down. He was just uncomfortable. And I said, "Listen, you know, we're making this movie about Dr. Sarno. You got to read this book." And he said, Sarno, last week we were shooting with Larry David, and he called that guy. He called Dr. Sarno. So that's how we knew Larry David was a patient. So we just called up his secretary and said, you know, we're making this movie. So he just didn't know how we knew, but he accepted the call.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and then actually what's interesting is, I think I wrote about it, I can't remember if I wrote about it today or if it's for tomorrow, but Dr. Andrew Weil, when I was laying on the floor,
huge
I was
name.
Thinking,
yeah.
We need to have him in it because I didn't even actually know that he talked about Dr. Sarno. I just thought we need that integrative approach because that's where this is going. Mm-hmm. Kind of integrative medicine isn't going to be integrative anymore. It's just going to be medicine. Mm-hmm. And the next day, a guy called me and he was working on a kind of a commercial campaign for one of the products that Andrew Weil works on. He says, "Can you and Rumor come in and shoot this thing with Andrew Weil?"
Wow.
I swear to God, it was the very next day. I was like, yeah. And so then when we were there, yeah, I pulled him aside and I said, "We're doing this thing about Dr. Sarno. Can we film with you at some point?" And he said, "Yes, of course, next time in New York, I'll let you know." And so we went to his hotel and shot that.
That is terrific.
And he was very supportive. And the same, you know, with Ben Crane, it was, his interview is so great and he's so, so awesome. And I can't wait to try and figure out how to use it in the movie.
And the Jonathan Ames video I saw was also terrific.
Yeah, and that's a funny story where Martha called me on Thanksgiving 2 years ago and said, "Someone just called to tell me that there's a TV show on HBO where they made a joke about Dr. Sarno." So it took
bored
me a little
to
while to figure out what it was.
Yeah.
And, yes, bored to death. And I figured out what it was, and it was like, that was great, because a really good friend of mine is best friends with him. So I was able to get to him and explain what we were doing. And he said, "Great, sure." I said, "You want to go meet him?" He said, "I'd love to." So we just met him in a cab and went up there and filmed his story in a cab on the way there. And it was just a really great scene. And it gave us an opportunity to have kind of a verite scene. And actually, one of the sad things is he said it's okay for the movie, but we did, there's a, in the scene, forced to see it. And what he says is, you know, I don't know how to get mad because in my family growing up, my dad had all the rage and there wasn't any room left for anyone else. And we'd already chosen that title, All the Rage, without even remembering that line. But he felt like he doesn't want that to be a viral video clip. So we had to take it out because he just didn't want his dad to see that and feel bad because he has TMS, right? So he doesn't want to offend his father.
Right.
But we redid the scene with a different thing, and he's happy with it. And it actually was good because it had us go back in and see that we could actually have Dr. Sarno clarify the ideas a little more.
That's good.
Yeah.
Good to hear. Excellent. And obviously the footage from Tom Harkin's office is terrific. And the C-SPAN footage is amazing. I'm very interested to know about what larger themes you're going to be bringing in this movie. I hear Dr. Sarno, but can you talk a little bit about some of the larger themes that you want to get to in the movie?
I mean, I think what I'd like the film to do is be subtly philosophical so that we try to stay away from getting too detail-oriented and we talk more about bigger ideas. Because I had this very interesting run with my cousin 25 years ago when I went running with him. He was a history of science PhD candidate at the time. And he was talking to me about physics. And he said, the problem with physics is that even 50 years ago, everyone in the field of physics knew what everyone else was doing. And now it's gotten so specialized that the person working over here doesn't know what this person is doing. And so you actually see kind of like this real slowdown in new knowledge because they're just not connected. And, you know, that really that stuck with me so much. And you see that in this case as well, is that we start to pay so much attention to the details. So, for instance, even if someone's trying to get over this and they start to really try to be the best TMS patient and they try to find out all the details, at a certain point, things get out of balance, and it becomes orthodoxy. So for me, one of the things I'm really interested in is the problems of orthodoxy and the problem of balance. And so from my own personal perspective, what I'm trying to do, and again, this is all subtext, what I'm talking about right now, is I want the film to be very much about balance, about balancing out ideas. This is kind of a digression, but it's not. A couple of years ago, when my daughter was in third grade, she had me read this fable about a Norse god, and it was about it was the god Thor, and he was fighting the ice giants, and he came down to the people that he was protecting to get dinner because he was tired from fighting them, and they didn't have any food, so they only had a goat, and so he killed the goats with his thunderbolt, and he said, "Do not eat the marrow. Do not break the bones." So the next morning he gets up and he hits the thunderbolt again, and the goats come back to life. And one of them's lame because a kid ate the marrow. So he makes that kid basically his slave. And so the idea is, well, what is the story about? And she wanted to say right then it was about, you know, we were talking about how it was about respect. But then as the story progresses, what happens is it turns out that the ice giants have been tricking him. And the kid, I think, helps him realize this. And once he realizes that he's getting weak through trickery, he gains back his strength and he smites them. So it actually became about this idea of balance and belief. And I think that's, you know, so in a way, I guess what I'm getting at is that I want the film to have that fluid nature of ideas within it without being too specific. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
A little bit. So the idea of balance is really important to me. So to the degree that, like, say, so that it doesn't become so TMS focused that you don't see the larger picture that this mind body problem is everywhere, and that the idea of TM. Yeah. Go ahead.
We just have a little bit of an echo. And I'm gonna start.
Someone.
Okay, we'll take this out of the recording. Gotcha. Okay. Continue your sentence. We'll remove that.
Yeah, no, someone had asked a question that was trying to answer. Oh, no, it was just an echo.
Yeah.
Now, where was I? It's about kind of this balance between getting the ideas of TMS but not getting so caught up with them in a kind of a cultural orthodoxy that we lose sight of this, that very simple idea, which is that our emotions are the causative factor. And I think that the more we can keep things simple while understanding ideas and some complexity, so that balance between complexity and simplicity. And just that's really the goal, is to have a movie that feels that is balanced and deals with balance in that way, so that it doesn't even get stuck in its own cultural time and become worthless in that way. And so it can always be a resource, even 20 years. It doesn't get out of date because it's stuck in out of date ideas.
Sounds very valuable. So I've unmuted a bunch of the phones. I'd like to keep this quite focused. But if anyone has any questions specifically about what he was describing, I think it's a deep topic, and I thought perhaps someone might want to add a question to clarify,
and
then we'll continue.
Any questions?
About that specific.
I had a question in terms of kind of details he'll be going into in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that really stood out to me during my recovery during TMS was that this was an unconscious process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, throughout my 4 years in pain, you know, a few people had kind of asked me, do you think it could be stress related? And to be honest, I'm a pretty kind of laid back guy.
Right.
And I don't really get angry. And so that explanation never really made much sense to me. But when I read Healing Back Pain, and learned that this was an unconscious process, and our unconscious minds process the world completely different than we do consciously, you know, like a little child or a parent. I'm curious, in the movie, how you portray that, because I know it's going to be different than for everyone. Some people are people who are kind of neurotic, or they get stressed out a lot and they can see that connection, whereas I think a lot of people will be like, well, I don't get angry all the time. You know, I'm not sad about anything. I don't feel scared about anything. Why should I have PMS? Right. So I'm curious how you address that in the film.
Well, we were just talking about the scene with Jonathan Ames, and it addresses that directly, because he talks about exactly what you're saying, is he's very laid back, and that, you know, he doesn't even know he's angry. It's so unconscious. So he's kind of come to terms with that and talking about it in that way.
Yep. Continue. Okay.
It'll be addressed through some of the characters and through some of the discussion, and it'll be through the lecture, things like that. That idea will be there, and actually, thank you, because that, you know, hopefully, you know, since I'm talking, I'm not getting this all written down, but hopefully, we'll be able to pull out notes from this, because, you know, everything I'm hearing is incredibly helpful, which is one of the reasons I wanted to do this, but also just wanted to thank everybody for all the support, and you know. We're extremely collaborative people, and we're really open to everything that people are bringing to it. It's only going to enrich it, and it's not an ego-driven process where it's our vision. It's about trying to translate all of these different people's ideas into a very simple stream that becomes, again, like at one point we're calling the movie Unthinkable, because what you're saying, you know, what you bring up is this idea of almost can't even imagine that you have unconscious stress because you don't feel it. It's unthinkable, or that these ideas are not thinkable by the culture. So back to the idea that you asked just a moment ago, like, what is the theme? And I think one of the themes is just, and it's really hard, like, I don't know if we're going to get someone who deals with cultural theory again, but this idea of how we exist in a cultural milieu, and that milieu shapes us in ways that we are not aware of. And it's only sometimes like when we go to Europe and we go, oh, gosh, look how they live. And then you kind of can look back at America and go, oh, wow, look how we live. It's sometimes you need to step out of your milieu to understand that there are these unconscious things that everyone believes. And so, for instance, everyone over the last 50 years came to believe that pills would solve us, or that we're going to find this answer to everything. And we're just not, because the fact is we've gone out of balance in that regard. Pills can change our chemistry and make us feel better momentarily, perhaps. They can solve some symptoms for a moment. But if the deeper issue has something to do with our emotions and we're not dealing with that, it's unthinkable. That's when we're going to get this pain epidemic, and that's what happened. And I think that's – so that's, again, this idea of like kind of softly dealing with really complex intellectual issues in a way that just makes people aware of them without even using words to describe them. Because as you start to use words, you also change them, and you put imprints on them. And so trying to use the art of cinema to make people feel and be aware of things that make them conscious of things that were formerly unconscious.
Very interesting. Okay, so the last question I have, and after you answer this question, I'm going to open it up, is how can we support? What can we do to help?
Well, you know, at this point, all the sharing is doing the job. If anybody has two things. One, there's the one of, like, how do we get this thing done? How do we raise the money? That's what I'm referring to now. And that's simply, you know, getting the word out. If anybody knows someone at a health blog or any way to kind of get it a bigger platform, that would be great. That's what we need right now. We need people seeing the trailer, because, as we've seen, one out of every 10 people who see the trailer back the project, because it connects with them. So right. It's as simple as that. And, you know, if people are willing, like, I have actually done this many times. You know, in terms of Kickstarter, what's interesting about our project is the vast majority of people, it's their first time backing a Kickstarter project. Mm-hmm. So don't really understand the milieu of Kickstarter, but it really is so much about people being passionate about something that was not fundable in some other way. For instance, Rumor, I think we've backed 83 projects, and many times that backing is way beyond simply just buying the thing. So, for instance, a friend of mine made a book of photographs recently at CBGB's gallery that he shot. CBGB's the club, but he shot all these photos in the late 70s when the Talking Heads and Blondie and all these bands were playing there. And I had done a photo book via Kickstarter, so I knew a bunch of different websites to make it go. And I got him on all these websites, and he raised $130,000 for a photo book.
Wow.
Yeah. So when these things go and they reach the right audience, they can really go. And honestly, we didn't expect to be at this place as far as we are, except we had a couple of really amazingly supportive people already that really pumped the numbers up. But having 300 people do it is incredible, considering that it hasn't had any media yet. And I think it's great for us that we've kind of proved the concept to the media people. And I think by next week, we'll start seeing media, and that's going to make it really go.
Well, that's terrific. That's terrific.
But then on the other level of how to make this movie, again, I got such great, I know I talked endlessly here, but I got a lot of great insights from even the few comments that I allowed through. I didn't mean to go on like this, but I look forward to all these everybody's thoughts about it as we go forward. And you know, I've talked to several people in terms of like a new, you know, when the film is going to be seen. Obviously, what we want to do is make it as available as possible to all these people who have supported it. So if it comes down to it, and say we get into a film festival in New York and we can't get an endless number of tickets that we want, we'll arrange a screening at the same time or something. We'll make sure that everybody gets to see it in the proper way. So.
Gotcha. That is terrific. Okay. We will also, for people who don't know how Kickstarter works, if you found this on Facebook, Kickstarter is just a website. You go, it's a way for you to support the film. You make a donation, you get a reward in return. You can get a special edition of the DVD. There's a number of other rewards that come with it. We will include a link to that where we distribute this recording. Okay, so Tennis Tom, you are finally unmuted.
Yeah, well, you followed the good doctor around for 10 years. Let me ask you, what kind of TMS symptoms did he get that you observed, and how did he handle them?
Not so much, you know, he would talk about how he would get a pain in the gut, and he would know what it was, and you have to go think about it. He would get a pain here or there. But you know, as much as we followed him, again, we didn't spend an inordinate amount of time with him. The most we did was like the trip down to DC, or we would go shoot in the office for a couple of hours. But you know, he's a pretty private person, and he didn't really want to be a documentary character. So that was one of the difficult things in making a movie about someone who didn't want to have a movie made about them, but was willing to try. All I can say is that he's been extremely generous with his time and with his ideas.
He's not a Kardashian, I guess, is where you're going.
No. Yeah, no. Okay. He doesn't have that kind of...
Did he acknowledge, though, that he got TMS? And,
oh, yeah, he talks about it all the time. Oh, yeah, he says he probably has more TMS than anybody else.
Well, yeah, that's my point. Is that, see, he is a charismatic Mount Rushmore figure to the rest of us.
Right.
But he's still human. And what interests me in biography is to see the human facet of these icons like Dr. Sarno, and that I figure, like you said, he got TMS as more than anyone else. And what kind of symptom, for instance, a regular symptom that comes up at the board is a urinary urgency, it's talked about. And for instance, does Dr. Sarno take Flomax for urinary urgency? Or does he 100% handle this? Does Dr. Sarno take any meds, you know?
Yeah, you know what? Like I said, the way we were doing this was very much respecting his privacy. And so, if I had that answer, I wouldn't tell you, but I don't have that answer. But I will tell you that he talked about having a lot of symptoms. And I will say one of the things that we're trying to figure out is there are some times where he did express some anger and some frustration. And we want to put that in the film, but we also want to be respectful of him. And so we're trying to figure out how to handle those issues. It's about just being like, one of the things I think is interesting as a documentary filmmaker over the last 20 years is kind of thinking about my own relationship to it. Like in college, I was a religious studies major and I studied anthropology. And I think my first approach to film, when we made our first movie, it was a feature film, even though we were documenting a music scene, because I felt like we were too much a part of something to make a documentary because I thought you had to be like an anthropologist and have critical distance. I've actually come full circle on that, and I feel like if you are making that kind of documentary, it's essentially colonialist in its inception. And so as I make films now, what I'm trying to do is think I'm working in collaboration with somebody and treating them with the utmost respect, that it reflect a combination of what our ideas are and what their ideas are. And that if we have mutual respect, our ideas, which challenge theirs, will be accepted because we're working respectfully together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but, you know, in the end, I think a film, most people view it as entertainment. And
yeah.
To me, what I'm asking about is, yeah, I respect Dr. Sarno to the utmost and his privacy, but I'd also like to know practically how does he handle it as a doctor? To me, that would be the most interesting thing that I would find out. Are you still seeing Dr. Sarno, or are you still filming him?
We have not filmed him in a while. I'm actually living in North Carolina now. We keep trying to get together, but haven't been able to. But to be clear, the film will be as honest and present as he allowed us in. But again, he didn't want that kind of documentary. He wanted it to be about the ideas. And so that's where, in some ways, I said earlier that I became kind of a character because I was willing to be more present and show warts and all. And I may not be famous or an icon, but at least it will give it a certain level of humanness that we weren't able to kind of pull in other ways. Because early on, one thing we were trying to do was find characters who were in pain who would go see him. But the logistics of it and the mechanics of it were so difficult, we were never able to do that. Either they didn't want to be filmed, or they didn't have the money to pay the whole fee, and he certainly is so intensely private or aware of the privacy of his patients that he certainly wasn't going to introduce us to anybody. So
yeah.
It was about kind of balancing those things.
How about Steve-O? Steve-O has expressed that he would like to be in your film, and he is one of the most foremost authors. I mean, if they had a TMS for Dummies, I think his book would be, you know, that book.
His book is TMS for Dummies.
Yeah. Have you worked with Steve Ozanich?
We've emailed quite a bit, and we talked recently. The reason we have not filmed with him yet was we just simply didn't have a budget to fly to Cleveland and shoot. But we will. With him and hopefully with Nicole Sachs as well, because I think that their stories are integral to this story as well.
Yeah, great. I think they're two. I mean, especially both Steve-O and Nicole are totally wide open, and I think aren't private about it, and
yeah.
Could be good candidates for your film. Their histories with TMS.
Oh yeah, no. I think both of their books are excellent, and I think that they're both really interesting people. We want to film them, and we want them to be in the movie. The one issue that comes back to, as I was saying earlier, is there is a certain limit on how much you can put into a 90-minute movie. So I want them to be characters, and I'm hoping they will be in the movie.
Okay, let me ask you a quick. For instance, budget wise, how much would it cost for you to go to? I think he's in Dayton, Ohio. And Nicole's in New Hampshire, I believe. What does it cost
Delaware,
to go Delaware to go shoot?
It costs $500 to $600.
Oh, that's not much.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but when you're working with literally no budget, and we've been, which is what we have been doing, we just didn't have any resources to do it, to just fly places, unless it was absolutely essential. So if we got someone like Ben Crane, okay, I'll put on a credit card and I'll go fly there.
Right.
You know, but the things that are less essential, that are less time sensitive, they've just had to wait, and we definitely plan to do it.
Great. Yeah, I don't think that's a whole lot of. I mean, that's easy for me to say, but
right. But yeah, it's. We don't have jobs. Nobody is supporting us. I don't have an academic job. So we have to just hustle all the time to do commercial work when we can get that. But mostly what I do is spend almost all of my time trying to make these movies, but that doesn't leave me much resources to go and travel and things like that for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear you on that.
Hey, well, Forrest is an economist, so maybe he can help you in that.
He can help me with the stats.
There's something about, oh gosh, I wish there was a principle of, we'll call it identity, where it's hard to change numbers. And one of the things I study is finance, and yeah, the bank numbers, they don't seem to change the way that we want them to.
I don't know. I sometimes I feel like Jesus. We stretch a dollar.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, because we like I said, we've been working on this the entire time. We've applied for I'd say 50 grants, and we have not gotten a single one. So it's difficult, you know. And that's why we've turned to Kickstarter, because when you're making something that challenges paradigms, like you can't go to the Sloan Foundation because it seems to be an anti-science movie. You can't go to the Jerome Foundation because they don't do it, and I think there's some foundation that focuses on healthcare. The Ford Foundation isn't interested. They're interested in just films for justice for all. Sundance, it's, you know.
Does anyone else want to jump in while you are? We have this award-winning director on the line, the person who is in charge of the Sarno documentary. Anyone want to jump in or have a question about what's been discussed so far?
The question that occurred to me when I just heard about this seminar and watched the blurb was, since Dr. Sarno is retired, how much of the filming was done after his retirement? Did he cooperate with you on the footage, or is this all taken before his retirement?
This is largely shot in the period before he retired, and a little bit like we went to his house after he retired to record some interviews and try and get kind of more specific sound bites. But it's done. We're doing this very much in cooperation with him and his family, and trying to make sure that it stays true to what he believes. And at the same time, my own journey is part of the story, and so that allows us to kind of go a little bit farther afield and talk to some other people, and have it instead of it being it's not a biopic. And before you came on, we talked about the idea that the first act, especially thinking of it as say a three-act movie, the first act is primarily Dr. Sarno's story. But I think that what we realized is if we told Dr. Sarno's story and left it at that, it wouldn't be as effective in transmitting a larger message of connecting it to the whole healthcare problem of mind-body issues. So we're also, Act Two is going to open up to Dr. Clark and Dr. Matte and talking about kind of the larger issues of how the mind and the body interact.
You were talking before about how, if you have one person saying this, I loved the image that you used before. If you have one person, do you want to go into that again? Because I think it's a
Yeah, sure. What I was saying was, as powerful and persuasive as the evidence surrounding Dr. Sarno is, I often refer to the reviews on Amazon as data. Now, if you're a scientist, you're going to say that's not clean data because it wasn't taken in a controlled setting, et cetera, et cetera. But if you look at the 945 reviews, 90% of them are 4 or 5 star. And to me, that's data that supports what he's saying and who he is. And that just grows. What's astounding is there was 500 reviews in the last year. So that's what I'm saying, that without anybody promoting this book or anything, it's bubbling up. But even still, if you did a movie about him, it would be an N of one story. It would be this one doctor doing this one thing, and people would be moved, and then they would leave the theater and they'd forget. But if we can tie it in to the whole healthcare issue of Dr. Clark, so you can imagine a body and you see this visually, and you see how pain is the issue that Dr. Sarno was working with successfully. And then you hear from Dr. Clark, and he talks about how he used basically the same methods without even knowing who Dr. Sarno was. They came to the same conclusion, looking at the way they were practicing medicine and finding out that it wasn't working. And so they asked the hard questions, well, why isn't it working? Let me see what else might be a factor. And then they started to notice that the emotions were clearly involved in both of these situations, and both of them started to treat in that way. And then you have Dr. Matte, who had the same revelation after many years of working as a family physician. He realized that people who he'd seen for 30 years, who were the people who he said could not say no, they were, goodest to such a degree that they didn't even know how to say no, then they got autoimmune diseases. And so if you pull back from it, it's pretty easy to see that pain is often, you know, a first line of defense of the body saying, hey, there's something wrong here. Let's pay attention. You know, so it's kind of a war within the body. And if you don't pay attention, perhaps it goes to the gut, and perhaps it goes to, you know, rheumatoid arthritis, and it becomes chronic and intractable. And so once you can kind of connect all those things, it becomes really hard to completely dismiss it, because you've told a compelling story that connects all of these things.
Mm. It's so fascinating how all these different thinkers have come up with this idea completely independently, but how they seem to be gravitating towards the same thing. Like
exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Like Dr. Clark, so I've known him for almost 6 years now, five and a half. And it's been interesting to watch his perspective and how it's changed in terms of, I hear him talking, for example, more about rage and anger from childhood, which is, you know, straight up rage. That's a very important Sarno concept.
And it's exactly what Gabor Mate talks about too. He's written several books about raising children and being more present for your children, because that's where the problems begin. That's where you unconsciously form these patterns. And so that's where, the movie goes. There's also, and I don't know if he's a doctor or not, but Ashok Gupta was a medical student when he got chronic fatigue. And so then it also becomes about, we have to deal with the issue of culture and how symptoms manifest themselves based on culture. And so in England, what we would call TMS, they tend to get chronic fatigue syndrome. And I can't remember the three letters they use. But he treats it in exactly the same way, and he talks about it in exactly the same way, which is that he talks about it as – he talks a lot about fear. And I think it's unconscious fear. It's fight or flight, amygdala, autonomic nervous system, and it's basically the same thing, and he treats it in a very similar way.
So. Can I ask a question?
Yeah,
please.
Let's see. So is the movie like I've seen the trailer and I've heard you talk. Is the focus of the movie going to be just testimony and explaining that this medical entity exists? Or is there also going to be one thing I find that being a physician and having gone through the training of a physician, I understand how they think and what makes them stumble and not be able to kind of follow through on what they instinctually know may be right or the right way to go. And one of the things is that if you tell a physician that something exists, he says, okay, it exists. But if you don't tell him, one, how to make the diagnosis, two, how to tell the patient, how to communicate with the patient in a way that's effective, and then three, what to do once the diagnosis has been made and the patient has been communicated with, then it just sort of blocks the whole thing, and he or she will do what they're doing now, which is like not addressing it, saying, I don't know what's wrong, go see this person. So is there going to be any part of the film that in some way addresses those communication dynamics and treatment dynamics?
That's an absolutely great insight, and it's something that, you know, I'm working with right now. My sister was a physician's assistant for many years, but she got burnt out on the process. She just got destroyed. She was seeing 60 patients a day, and so she's gone back and she's spent many years becoming a yoga instructor and a personal trainer. And her husband is still a physician's assistant, and my sister is extremely helpful in this process and extremely active in trying to help us frame it. But her husband is much more resistant and worried that the film is going to piss off doctors. And
oh, exactly. It's Walt breaking in. That was a question I was going to ask. Are you prepared for the opposition from the, you know, a big chunker of most of the medical profession and the pharmaceutical companies? I wrote a book on Abraham Lincoln.
Hold on.
Totally
Okay, so I want to give.
That's a good question, and it's the same question. And the truth is, we're trying to balance that out because what we want to do is make a film that people connect to. I feel like we're in a position to argue to doctors, to argue with doctors, and yet I don't want to make them angry. So I don't have any interest. In attacking anybody. Instead,
no,
I want to...
But you, yeah. Don't yeah. you think you can avoid that problem by getting champions to champion the idea of the mind-body? And one of the greatest champions, well, several of them, are Deepak Chopra and right. also Oprah Winfrey. She right. is a big supporter of the mind-body philosophy, and she helped make a worldwide bestseller out of Eric Toll's book, The Power of Now.
Exactly.
So if you can get her, Chopra and Toll, yeah. to champion the idea.
Can I?
Please.
Reframe my question. Yeah. I didn't mean to imply that any of this was making physicians mad or getting them to be defensive. I was talking about empowering physicians with...
I completely get what you're saying, and that's exactly the piece that we put in with Fran on an update just the other day to make that point. It was actually answering the question of my sister's husband. So I'm with you, and I'm saying I hear you, and I think that that's a great thing, and it's something that I want to try and incorporate. I've been thinking about it, but I think you... phrased it and framed it in a really productive way of mm-hmm. how it can communicate. And what I was getting at is I want to do that, and I want to try and do a million things. So I'm trying to figure out how do you weave all these ideas in a subtle way that it communicates to doctors as human beings
right.
who can't see it. And then I guess part of it is what I'm saying is like what I want to do, and this is probably where you can help us. I want the film to exist as a film, as a feature film that is vibrant and flows. At the same time, we want to build out an incredibly deep and vibrant website that allows this process to continue even as the movie exists, and it can contain, you know, the dozens of hours of extra important footage that's not going to be able to fit in a movie. And one of those things is, it can be a whole section of it is for physicians. How to do exactly what you're saying. And so perhaps it's even simply if you want to write up a few of these ideas and give them to me, I can actually put them up as an update now so that as more physicians come in to this fold of this Kickstarter process and then to the website, we can begin that even before the film is done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's what I'm saying. I do want it to be respectful, and I do – but and I guess at the same time I'm thinking of this in a certain way. I think one of the things that, as a group, I think you guys are aware of, that it's really hard to take these ideas to physicians. However, if the movie is as strong as we hope it is, and this is one of the reasons back to Walt's point a moment ago, is to try and get someone like an Oprah Winfrey to be in support of it. And I'll stop right now and say, actually, so, like this is the 16th day that I have done. I actually started that Deepak and Oprah meditation thing that goes 21 days, and I'm day 15 of it, and it's actually very good. And I was cynical about it, but I think it's really good. And so and we just filmed Ram Dass. So that's another thing that I was going to get to with the Eckhart Tolles, and that is where the film starts to go. And actually, one of the early backers of the project is Dr. John Sklar, who studied with Dr. Sarno, so I called him up right away when he backed a project, and I talked to him, and he said, you know, I'm really with this. The one place I really want it to go to is as Forrest mentioned in the beginning, is to God. And he wasn't talking about a Christian God or a Muslim God or a Hindu God. He's talking about the idea that there's a certain lack of connection to spirituality and to the inner self. And I want the film to go to that place and incorporate it. And that's been part of my own journey, is to become less cynical about those ideas and to embrace them more. And I think that's a really important part of healing. And I think the film also becomes about belief. There's all these different themes that we're trying to roll in, and I've been writing about a lot of them. A lot of it kind of stilted and clunky as I try to work through the ideas, but it's also, as Ben Crane and I talked about recently, it's also about being vulnerable and willing to kind of take chances with what I write and putting myself, being naked in the movie, essentially, because in order for the movie to communicate, you know, since Dr. Sarno is not very vulnerable, somebody has to be, right? And yeah. So that's it's all kind of, all of this is rolled into the same idea. And in that same way of being vulnerable, I'm not someone to go up to doctors and say, you're doing this wrong. But back to that same point, and I know I'm kind of going on a circular thing here, but that is the point, which is that if the movie is as good as we hope it can be, we believe it can help pull together not a cultural revolution, but a cultural awakening to these ideas that then force a discussion, which, and what I'm saying is this is happening. We've made many movies, and we've always been a little bit ahead of the zeitgeist. And I think this time, one of the reasons it's taken so long is that the zeitgeist is taking, there's something is happening. And that's what I was referring to a moment ago. There's not 500 reviews of Dr. Sarno's book out of the blue for no reason. People are waking up to these ideas, and it's not just the 500 people who've written reviews. And so, you know, back to the movie and this process that we're doing right now with the Kickstarter. So far, we've done very well. There's 300 backers, and it's entirely from Facebook shares. That's it, because nobody's written about it yet, and we are working on that. And in fact, when I got off the phone, I have to write a long email to a person who's agreed to help with publicity with kind of different medical web shows and different things. But I think if Howard Stern does talk about the film and talk about the Kickstarter, it'll take it to this other space where more people who already know about Sarno know about it, and then they'll get connected to the TMS Wiki, they'll get connected to Thank You, Dr. Sarno, and they'll get connected to the movie.
And that's, I think, right. Word of mouth is so important. Yeah. Facebook and Twitter, that's how revolutions have taken place, because of the social media.
The TMS Wiki's Facebook post, last time I checked, it had been shared 100 times. So
that's crazy. Yeah. And what I found, I mean, if you can look actually on the Kickstarter, it's the data's right there. We actually have a cool dashboard that shows all of the referrals and everything that we can see. But if you look on the page, it says it's got 2,500 Facebook shares, and there's 280 backers. So it's essentially more than 10-to-1 ratio. I mean, 10-to-1, yeah. So for every 10 shares, somebody backs it. And that's because enough people know about this and understand it. And we actually messed up with the Kickstarter. We didn't put Dr. Sarno's name in the subtitle, and we didn't realize that when it went up on Facebook, it wouldn't show the rest of the text. All it shows is that picture. And I think if it actually says his name in that subtitle, that ratio would be much higher. Because, you know, when people see his name, it's unbelievable. When I travel... I'll tell you another funny story. I was just traveling with the same film I'm taking to St. Louis tomorrow, and I was in Denver, and I was showing the movie, and afterwards I always say, so the next movie we're working on is this movie about Dr. Sarno. Has anybody heard about Dr. Sarno? And if there's 50 people, 3 people raise their hand, and 2 of them know about Dr. Sarno because of Howard Stern, and 1 person, someone gave the book. That's pretty much how it always goes. And it happens, it's constant. It's every time. Somebody knows about, I've never done a screening where somebody knows about him. That's how widely known he is.
Yeah. You know? Well, 2 years ago, when I had back pain, it's Walt again. I asked a nurse friend who's Japanese, and she is practicing in Hawaii. So I emailed her, and I said, Ruth, what can I do about my back pain without going to, you know, getting medical, an operation or medication? She said, read Dr. Sarno's book.
Yeah.
She said it helped heal a mutual friend of ours who's a psychiatrist.
Yep.
So that's how I learned about it.
Yeah, and that happens all the time.
Yeah.
And so I was going to also say that in terms of that idea of revolutionary ideas, when I go to St. Louis tomorrow, I'm also shooting with a guy named Prince E, and it's spelled Prince E-A. And you can look him up on Facebook. But I found him, and I posted a video of his today on the updates of the Kickstarter, because he'd done a video about stress, 60 seconds to explain stress. And what he's really talking about is the ideas of Eckhart Tolle and the ideas of mindfulness. But he's talking about it from a more populist perspective and it was amazing. So I immediately reached out to him without even realizing that video had been seen 30 million times. And within a few, you know, a few hours, he wrote back and said, sure, you can shoot with me.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and so his videos are seen 50 million times. It's crazy. So
well, you're doing a fantastic job, and I think it's wonderful. And it's a big one. It's a huge project, and it's not easy to... I'm a writer, and 40 books published, and I know that it's hard to put it all together, mm-hmm. a subject as complex and as controversial as this. So... Mm-hmm. Just, I encourage you to really keep at it, and we'll give you all the help we can.
All the help is appreciated, and you know, we have no doubt. Here, you know, what we've, so speaking back to the Oprah and Deepak thing, which is, it's all about kind of, you know, imagining what's good, and this one is all about, you know, it's not just what's good for you, but what's good for everybody, and I feel like all of these things are happening like that, where that's what's speaking to what this film is. This film is not an ego thing. It's about, this is really important, and this could save America. If you take out that $400 billion per year that's spent on chronic pain and the untold suffering, you know, what kind of different country would we have?
Well, I think the average person wants to know about this.
Yeah,
it's just how to get it to them. They, you know, they go on Facebook looking for ways to, you know, how can I sleep? I can't sleep. And it's, you know, it's stress that they're, and things they're worrying about. And through, you know, through their searching through eBay, I mean, through yeah. YouTube, they may learn about Eckhart Tolle and his book, The
yeah.
Power of Now,
right.
which is, you know, the TMS idea of live in the present.
Yep.
And so they want to, they're searching, and this video could be the way to help them find the mind-body connection and to accept it.
Right. And we, you know, one, speaking of mindfulness and mind-body connection, we were, we had been trying to reach out to, what is his name? The mindfulness guy, Jon Kabat-Zinn. And I have a friend who used to go do mindfulness with him in the 80s, but we haven't been able to reach him yet. But in an odd twist, we did film Ram Dass a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, Ram Dass brought all these ideas to the West from, you know, his book, Be Here Now, was kind of the prototype for all of these books. But what was interesting, when I wrote to him to say, can we film you for this movie, his assistant wrote me back the next day saying, yes, I've explained everything to Ram, and he's very interested. And by the way, I'm a patient of Dr. Sarno.
Wow. Fabulous.
So all of these things just keep happening in these really insanely odd connected ways, even to the degree that, I don't know, did you guys see the story about Glenn Beck the other day?
Yes, yes. Indeed. Yeah.
He's okay. Got TMS, but he doesn't know
yeah.
it.
Right. And so what's really interesting is I wrote a blog post about that, explaining that, you know, when I was talking about it before, like the first line of defense is pain. And when he just doubled down and ignored the pain, he got the autoimmune disorder. And so I wrote something about that. And, you know, regardless of anybody's politics, it's just I feel for the guy, and I would love for him to get, you know, to fix it. So I wrote this piece. And then what it turns out is that Glenn Beck had this guy Prince EA on his show twice in September.
Wow.
So when I meet with him tomorrow, I'm sure I'll be able to get to Glenn Beck, and hopefully we'll be able to even get on his show to talk about the movie and talk with him about it.
That'd be great.
Yeah. So that's all these weird connections keep happening. Yeah.
Michael?
Yeah.
Yes. Tennis Tom here. I was wondering, so do you have a PR company who does pitches to, like, Oprah and other media?
We don't yet. And here's the thing is, right now is not the time to go on Oprah, because we don't have the movie yet. The time to go on Oprah would be when the movie gets done. It would be great if she tweeted about it or something like that right now, but I think, you know, that's not going to happen. That's the problem we face with a Kickstarter is most people aren't going to have you do media unless there's a product, and that's just, you know, a reality
right.
of media and capital. But
right.
we are still trying to do things. We have a lot of experience with Kickstarter and with kind of thinking about viral videos. So that's one of the reasons
yeah.
that we've
yeah,
cut
yeah.
so many short clips. Yes.
Well, when you're ready
you,
to when
you,
the film
you have,
is
you
ready,
have.
I have
let
a
tennis, hold on, Walt. Let Tom speak. We want to make sure everybody gets a chance. Yep.
Yeah. So, Michael, do you have someone picked out who you would like to use for VR?
We have several different PR people that we work with in terms of documentary film. And I do have someone through MPI, the fiscal sponsor of the project. They have a PR person in D.C., and that's who I have to put together a document for tonight, because she's going to try and help us with the Kickstarter. But, you know, it's a kind of a different thing when we actually do a release of the film. And yet I agree with you that we need to be kind of talking about that. And we are. Go ahead.
When do you project the film to be completed?
We are aiming to have a decent rough cut by late spring. And what we would like to do is try and submit the film for the New York Film Festival and the Toronto Film Festival, which are September and October. That's our goal. And I think it's doable because normally it takes us about a year to cut a film, but we have been cutting quite a bit on this footage for a while, so we kind of know where we're going. But one of the things is we always underestimate. Even when we say it's going to take us a year, it's always an underestimation. It always takes longer because when you make a film like this, it really comes down to it has to be pretty much perfect. You can't have a moment when anybody loses their focus. You can't have a moment where it goes soft. It has to be kind of on point the whole time. And that takes an enormous amount of work to make it seem effortless.
Okay.
So that's the reality.
What kind of a budget are you looking for completion?
We have a budget that we've written down that's around $350, and that's to basically pay for a lot of it is actually, some of it is for the heavy, the graphics that we want to do. We want to do these three-dimensional paper cutout graphics because I think they're going to look like nothing anyone's ever seen before, which will make people wake up. And then, it's a full year of work to work on it, plus another 6 months to do the first round of festivals and all that and the promotion and everything. So our budget is really around $350, which is what we had considered putting up for Kickstarter, but we were nervous about not being able to reach it. Because if you don't reach your goal on Kickstarter, you don't get it. And everybody counseled us to do less, so we just listened to them. We probably should have just done the full budget.
Okay. Thank you for answering.
Yeah. No, and I will tell you on the quietly that one supporter just gave us a little bit of money, but didn't want to be known. But someone who's very interested in the subject, so that was very nice.
Well, if you get Larry Ellison interested in it, that'd be good.
Who's that?
Larry Ellison.
Oh, the is that the Oracle guy?
Oracle. Yeah. Oracle. Yeah, he supports a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if anybody's got a contact with him, let him know.
If I see him at the tennis tournament, I'll give him a copy of the bus.
Yeah. But what we have found is that, I think anybody who's ever had their life saved by him, as soon as they see this is happening, they want to help. And so that's where we are really praying that, Howard Stern does talk about it. And we know that he likes it. He just doesn't like to talk about raising money for anything on his show. So if we can just get him to mention it or tweet about it, I think that would make a big difference.
Yeah, well, I think to get on Howard Stern, I used to watch him a lot before, and syndicated. And if you can maybe get some pole dancer who has TMS and, go on the show, because that's his thing, bologna tossing. So you'd have to have a tie-in, maybe Dr. Sarno's wife naked going along or something like that. But in order to get on Howard, you got to have a, you got to pitch him from a point of view that would be interesting to his demographic, and that's naked people. So
either that or gross things. So my partner was saying that we could talk about the time I was stuck on the floor. How do you go to the bathroom when you're stuck on your office floor? He might be interested in. So we're with you.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. I like Howard.
Yeah.
Okay. If he's going to put you on the show, it's got to have some tie into his demographic.
Exactly.
Can I?
Shoot.
So I wanted, you had said that you'd made the statement that you thought this movie was headed in towards integrative medicine in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to clarify what you meant by that. Before you do that, I wanted to tell you a little bit of my story with TMS. I think most people have, headed down the conventional medicine pathway and gotten cut up in a lot of briar patches there with dissatisfaction. Because I was a physician, I realized very quickly in my suffering that conventional medicine had nothing to offer me. And if I wasn't careful, I was going to get slammed with a list of diagnoses that I did not want on my medical record.
Right.
And so I took myself out of the system really quickly within the first year and started looking to alternative medicine for treatment and healing. And that is where my 10-year odyssey commenced and ended without help. And the point being that I spent probably $25,000 out of pocket going to acupuncturists, energy healers, massage therapists, all kinds of physical therapists, integrative medicine doctors. I walked out of the office of the integrative medicine doctor with five substances in my hand that he had given me to take. And I was diagnosed with everything from vitamin C deficiency to too much magnetic radiation, to an asymmetric body, too long of a neck. It went on and on and on. So from my experience, it was really the alternative medicine world that kept me in a state of fear and on this roller coaster of TMS. And so with that history being given, I just wanted to hear your clarification about what you meant by integrative medicine. And I'll mute myself.
Okay, great. I think what you bring up is a really good point, which is, for instance, that Dr. Sarno himself is very against the idea that he would be seen as alternative at all. He's very conventional in his practice. When I was saying integrative medicine, what I was saying is that if I felt like we were going to be able to communicate to doctors, it would be doctors who saw themselves in that manner, and a doctor like Andrew Weil who could communicate these ideas. And I didn't even know that. His recommendation for back pain is read Dr. Sarno's book. When I thought that, I was just trying to think, how do we connect with a larger community? Because otherwise, you know, at that time, it would be somewhat of a kind of a ghettoized movie about a guy that nobody, that, you know, that would be almost like an underground film, and that's not what I wanted to make. So that's really what I was referring to at that point. Your journey sounds very interesting, and your process seems interesting, and perhaps is something that we should talk about, you know, filming with a little bit. But in some ways, I went on some of that path of trying to find other answers as well, or just see what other people were doing for other answers, because I wanted those ideas in the movie to be discussed and to be looked at. Does that answer the question?
Kind of, I guess. I understand. I certainly understand why you talked with Dr. Andrew Weil. He's certainly, you know, well-renowned and respected.
For me, I think...
I didn't really answer the question about if you were suggesting in the film that people should be looking in the direction of alternative medicine. I personally would highly disagree with that, because I think that the alternative medicine world is doing the exact same thing that the conventional medicine world is doing in this regard. And that's providing a lot of diagnoses that have no scientific basis. And in the process, scaring people into thinking that something's wrong with their body. And if they just took more vitamin C, and if they just got more massages, and if they just stopped using the computer so much, that they would all be better. And I think it's just contributing to our culture of fear that we have in our society.
I think that you're right. And I think that we are in agreement.
Continue.
I said, I think that you were right, and I think that we are in agreement.
Great. Anyone else want to jump in?
Yeah, I have another question. Michael, I'm curious as to who you see as the future face of the TMS movement with Dr. Sarno retired. You know, this movie is obviously going to generate a lot of interest. And I'm curious who you think is going to kind of, who we're going to pass the torch to as we move forward.
Well, I think one of the things that I think Dr. Sarno was very interested in was not being that guy. He didn't, like, for instance, when it started to be kind of a cult of personality, when he would do his lectures, he disbanded the lectures because he didn't want the focus to be on himself. So, you know, I think that the Sarnos are interested in us filming with some of the other doctors. We have filmed with Dr. Schechter. I plan to film with Dr. Rosh Bauman, with Dr. Schubiner, and I've talked to both of them, but haven't, again, had the resources to do it yet. But, you know, I think really, in some ways, I think a person who speaks really well to these issues from a scientific level is Gabor Maté, and I think that he'll be an important figure in the second half of the film, as is Dr. Clark, who I think instead of it being a singular voice, I think it's that if there are people from different fields that can all come together and recognize the connection between what they're saying, that's what I'm talking about, kind of a shift in healthcare, in which it goes back to saying, okay, that seems like it's what's going on. It seems to me that the first question that a doctor should ask is not what are your symptoms, but what's going on in your life. And I think that's really what hopefully the film will help make happen a bit more, rather than an individual being the voice of it. I don't, because it's not someone jumping out and going, okay, well, the end of the movie is someone's taking over the legacy. The hope is that the legacy is simply that the ideas become a part of the culture. And what I was referring to earlier with the fact that, you know, his books has 500 reviews this year and it's number one, it's like one of the top 100 books on Amazon. Something is going on and that people are just becoming, there's a tipping point, a zeitgeist tipping point type of thing. And I really believe this is happening. And it connects back to, you know, ideas surrounding research around stress and it kind of this rise of a mindfulness movement, which I see as a very positive thing.
Interesting question. Anyone else?
Thank you.
Yeah. Good question, though.
I just wonder about this concept in structural anthropology where a bunch of ideas emerge simultaneously in surrounding some discovery that coincide because of some kind of ongoing structural congruence in the idea, the ideology, the ideas latent in the culture at large. And it seems like this mind-body idea is being discovered simultaneously by a lot of different people at the same time.
Right.
Like there are forces of confluence, I guess, that are bringing this idea to the fore.
Right.
And this isn't coincidence. This is like a general movement, an intellectual movement in the culture.
Yeah.
And it seems like by you bringing all of these different people in, you're reinforcing that idea. It isn't just an accident that Sarno stumbled on this,
right,
or Maté's concept of autoimmune disorder coming from repressed emotional coping styles.
Right.
It's like all of these people are running into this at the same time.
Exactly. And what is, yeah. I mean, I'm 100% with you on that. And one of these really interesting things that happened is we were cutting some of the footage. And again, all these strange coincidences happen with this movie that are kind of surreal to me. But we were cutting a scene where Dr. Sarno is saying, before Freud, all mental illness was seen as a disease of the brain. And he says, we've come full circle because now all mental illness is seen as a chemical imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really the same thing. And so we saw that, and we thought, that's really interesting. And that night, we put on the movie by Nicholas Ray called Bigger Than Life, just a coincidence. And in that movie, Anthony Hopkins comes down with a disease, a stress disease of the blood. This is 1950, and he's putting himself under inordinate stress to live a middle-class life. So the movie is more about suburban malaise than it is about medical issues, but the subtext is medical issues. And so they hold a bridge party the first night, and a woman says, the doctor says my son has asthma, and he thinks he needs to get a shot. Forget that. I'm not going to the doctor. I'm getting a vacuum cleaner. And so there's this kind of this idea of what is environmentally based, what is emotionally based. Or he says, I think my son's stressed out and he has asthma. You know, so that idea is there. And then this guy has an attack of pain, Anthony Hopkins, and he's put in the hospital, and he said, we might have this wonder drug, and it's called cortisol. So here's a guy who we're talking about has the classic symptoms that we're all discussing, and their answer is to give him a stress hormone because his body is so depleted. And what happens is he ends up going crazy and almost killing his son. But the point is that it was at the absolute rise of mechanistic medicine. During this whole movie, when he's in the hospital for weeks, nobody asked him a single question. They poked him and they prodded him and they took his blood and then they told him what he had. But nobody said to him anything about psychological phenomenon. And so that was 1950, and I feel like that was the height of this kind of beginning of this movement in which the doctors know everything. In the orthodoxy of medicine, they are the high priests, and we are just the laity who is supposed to take their dispensation. And I think what we're talking about is people are beginning to realize that that isn't making us healthy. The numbers show that. Our bodies show that. And so that we have to become more aware of our own personal responsibility for being aware of what's going on in our minds and our bodies. And I think that's really what I think we're seeing in a kind of that, what you were talking about in the cultural anthropology of it, the sine wave is coming back around. But I don't think it's going to be violent, but I do think it will be sudden. Does that make sense? It's exactly what you're saying, and I'm seeing that over working on this for 10 years.
That's the drug. Got it.
Yeah, you see that in physics where two physicists are working on the same problem, and they're separated geographically, and they both stumble on it through different doors at the same time. And it isn't just coincidence. It's the cultural milieu demanding that kind of solution at that moment in time.
Yes. And even as you say it, it makes me feel like simply having an expert on cultural anthropology say this, which actually might be my cousin, who is a history of science professor, would be very useful.
Yeah, kind of top-level analysis to go over what you're doing, what you're doing in the film.
Yeah. And then, you know, what we often do is we would film something like that and then find out that, you know what, it's already in there. And in fact, when you have someone say it, you actually take away the person's experience of it themselves.
Mm.
Right? You know what I mean? It's like you almost feel like, well, I knew that. Why did you have to ruin my own discovery of that idea? Because when people feel like they're getting it for themselves, they feel empowered. But if you tell it to them, so oftentimes we have done that. We'll film some expert, or we'll have a card in, and at a certain point, we're able to kind of have it so embedded in the story that we can take the card out, and the film shines. That's a good point, and that's. Very much, again, all that kind of in terms of the philosophical ideas of it, that's what we want to bring out, those ideas. And it's going to be hard, but that's why it's going to take a year to edit.
Well, it sounds fascinating. I'm really, really looking forward to watching it. So we've had a bunch of background sound. It is really, really tough when you're having to have a town hall meeting and people are in 12 different rooms. I'm going to unmute everyone, or at least everyone on the phone. So be careful. Now is not the time to flush the toilet, or whatever else might be happening in the background. Let's wrap up soon.
Exactly. Easy.
Okay. I'm gonna mute that one. But I just wanted to thank you very much for joining us. It was terrific. We really appreciate you taking the time to meet with us and, you know, just share what's going on.
I feel like I hope you understand that we feel like we're all doing this together, that it is a collaborative effort, and that it's important to us that we represent it in a way that everybody feels comfortable with. And but for that reason, one of the things that we want to do is try and keep it a little simple, so that it can speak to people who don't know the lingo, who don't know the ideas, but goes back to that very simple idea. I mean, it's so simple. Think about what's going on in your life before you go to the doctor. It's that simple.
Yeah.
You know,
because really the movie isn't for us, but the most important ideas really aren't that complex. Yeah.
They're so simple. And the more complexity we part to them, the harder it is for us to get over it. And you know, that's me as well. It's been a very long, like, I still have, my foot is a nice barometer of my stress. And the last couple of weeks have been pretty stressful with trying to get all this stuff going. So I've had to try to meditate twice a day, and I've had to try to just remind myself, be mindful as I work and not fall into the same kind of anxiety-ridden work habits. And so it's my own process is instructive to me and keeps me – so in that same thing I was talking about with the kind of the colonialist approach, I think it's really – one of the things I think is going to really help us is that I have enough personal experience with this that I do understand – And I'm not 100% better. None of us, I think very few people will be 100% better ever. It's called the human condition, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. You're on Eastern time, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So I can't be the only one who's getting tired here.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for staying up late for us.
Sure. And okay. Again, you know, I'm happy to do it again at some point. And the last thing I do want to say is that we really do welcome all of your ideas and thoughts, and that, you know, like you said, Forrest, that we want it to be for the person who doesn't know this, but for them to understand it, they have to understand it from the perspective of people who really have struggled with it.
Right. Should we make like a feedback thread for you on the forum if people want to give you feedback and stuff like that? Okay.
Absolutely.
So we'll, and when it's updated, I'll make sure to send you an email so you can see.
Yeah, and people can also comment on the clips themselves on the rumor.com or on the Kickstarter, and we get those messages.
Gotcha.
You know,
terrific.
And I try to respond to them too.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good one. Thanks everyone for joining us. Good
night,
all.
Thank you guys. I really appreciate all of your feedback.